Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive. We have a crowded set full of sports and music and radio and PR people. We are here at Amici's of Little Italy, one of my favorite places on earth. They are bringing Sam Sessa the meatballs and the delicious garlic cheese toast. I can't believe Jody asked me if I wanted cheese on the... Of course I want garlic cheese toast. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. I have Raven scratch-offs to give away. Seth Elkin is coming here. He's bringing his trash from Pittsburgh this week for the Maryland Lottery. But he's also bringing me the Magic 8-Ball scratch-offs that I'm going to have. Also, Jiffy Lube Multicare powering us up and powering Luke back and forth from Owings Mills. It is a busy week for football. It is a busy week for Santa Claus. It is a busy week for eggnog drinkers and crab cake eaters. John Maroon is here. I think the last time you were on was Drug City. I called you a reformed sports media executive. Does that sound right?
I think that is right.
All right. And Sam Sessa has decided to stay longer because I knew that they must know each other, right?
It's Baltimore,
baby. And Sam's waiting for the meatballs and the garlic cheese toast, and I'm going to make a big stink about it when Jody brings it out here because it's delicious, and everybody should be ordering it. I think they should name it after me because it's my favorite thing here. But you guys know each other, and everybody knows Maroon, Ripken, and when I told Jody, Ripken's guy's coming, Maroon likes to think of himself as more than Ripken's guy, so I'll let you do that for the next hour, because that's not what you do, but it's who you were, not who you are, and you said, oh, John, hand in the thing in the Science Center. Hey, did I ever tell you the story? And if Don Mohler were here, he'd say, stop, you're going to tell the story on the air. So that's what I made you do. You didn't even want to stay. You got kids you got to get home to and all that. But you have – it's Baltimore. And I knew this was going to happen, that there would be some crosstalk, that you guys had crossed paths because you worked at the paper. You did everything with Cal Ripken. And there is apparently some humor in this story from what I understand. Is that correct, John?
Yeah. I mean, well, I remember I want to hear what Sam's remembrance of it is because he did the story. But I remember Cal having to put his hand in goop. For an extended period of time.
What is goop?
I don't know.
Plaster of Paris?
Yeah, that.
Okay.
For an extended period of time, just to make sure that the mold took. But then Sam did a story.
So what is this?
So I just noticed it because I was going there with my son at the time. He was really small. And I was like, what is the story? I didn't know the full back. What is the story behind Cal Ripken's? So there's in the kids area of the Science Center. So it's like a special kids area in the Science Center. You go in, and there's like a cutout of Cal or a picture of him on the wall, and he's got this life-size arm coming out of the wall.
Oh, so you can shake hands with Cal.
Yeah. But
okay.
It's kind of off-putting because it's like, there's Cal Ripken's hand right there.
Is this kind of like in Willy Wonka where they grab the hats?
Yes.
Remember that?
Yes.
That thing?
Very similar.
Okay.
So I was like, what's the story behind Cal Ripken's metal hand in the Science Center?
Yeah.
And then like all these people started chiming in, and you chimed in with the backstory.
Yeah.
So what's the backstory?
Well, the backstory was that they had this idea. They had this concept. Cal was at the height of being Cal, right? And it was all things Cal Ripken. And then he was starting to do things with kids. And
Well, the milk poster wasn't good enough.
A milk poster was step one, right? And that probably sprouted from that. But I remember, so it was the story was that somebody associated with the Science Center, I can't remember who it was, met him somewhere.
Okay.
And they shook hands. If you ever shake Cal's hands, you know this, Nestor. Like, he crushes you, and he looks you in the eye, and, it's like very firm. He's got a giant wombie hand. And this spurred a thought in this guy's hand. Like, everybody should be able to do that.
I want to shake Cal's hand.
So he proposed this idea of, like, let's recreate his hand in the Science Center. Cal thought it was kind of cool. He also didn't know what it would entail. And fast forward, it entailed half a day of, like...
Is this 95, 6, 7, 8, that era?
Somewhere in there.
I think I remember this. Because it was, like...
It was a thing.
It was comical.
It
really was. I think he talked about it. I was a real media member then. I remember him telling this story of, like, it wasn't nightmarish. It was just bizarre.
Hilarious, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's just because he thought, I'll run in, I'll do this. Like, he thought it was like, put your hand down. Like,
Players do something in rice back in the day, pitchers?
That was the pitchers. So
pitchers did rice, right?
So he puts it in goo, and he's like, okay, we done? They're like, oh, we'll be back in like 2 hours or whatever. He's like, oh.
Do I get to watch a movie?
It's like the wax hands at the Renaissance Fest, except longer.
Yeah, it's like a whole, it's like this part down.
Yeah,
right?
It goes up to the elbow.
Yeah, it's wild.
So for Cal.
I didn't know it was still there.
So I want you to be, you can be the Cal guy, because you are the Cal guy, but You did all of these things. I walked on the Great Wall of China.
Yes,
with I have a picture of me and Cal Ripken.
Yes.
That's and my random. Wife and Kelly and John on the Great Wall of China, right?
Okay.
So we went to so that's a hell of a Cal story.
It was
my
wild.
Other Cal story
no,
is
no, wait, I got a bad part of that. Ryan, I'm not Ryan. Nestor interviewed Cal Ripken
over Siberia.
On the plane like over Siberia.
Over Siberia. Over that's Siberia. True. That's yeah. I was going to say that too. But you remind me of Rick Mace. Did you work with
oh,
Rick,
yeah,
right?
Rick, Sam sure.
He looks a lot
me.
Like
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Rick was the other reporter on the trip.
Yeah.
It was okay. me. So there was one reporter on the trip, Rick and
because
then me.
How many media outlets are going to send somebody to China, right?
Sure.
And but
we've
Nestor,
never talked about this
Nestor's
story,
like,
I don't think.
Nestor's like, we're going. I'm like, all right. And
yeah.
so it was the State Department. We're sending Cal. We went to we
it was a goodwill
lucky.
Ambassador
we went
trip.
Japan. We went to China. We went to Nicaragua.
Nice.
Nicaragua. We went to Prague. So very blessed to be on those trips. And Nestor, he's like, I'm going to go to China. I'm like, all right. So he came. And then
it
the
was
sun
the
sent
first
Mace,
days
was,
where we had cameras. I was one of the few people there with a camera. That Mace wasn't carrying a video
no.
camera. He was still a writer.
We didn't back then.
Back then,
yeah.
right? So this is 07. This was October of 07.
You're better than me on that. Okay, I take your word.
It was October of 07 yeah. Because it was the year McNair fell apart. McNair was really good the first year.
Yeah.
I watched the game in Tokyo where they lost 38-0 to the Steelers. I was on that trip with you, so I remember that. But we did this Great Wall of China thing with Cal. We played quick ball at an orphanage,
was
which
amazing.
Was primary. We all were bawling.
Remember that we
I have video
coach.
Of all
brought
of
them
this.
All the
you can go to YouTube
really cool.
and watch any of this that you
it's really
want.
Cool.
It's all up there. I videoed it all on a little Canon camera. And this is the kind of the cool media part of it is, or not cool, quite frankly, given who's taking over the country in a couple weeks. Went to China with them,
cool.
met Cal at Dulles. We flew on the same plane. Maroon comes back halfway through the flight. We're over the North Pole, and you can see we're
really
literally
cool.
over the North Pole. And Maroon comes back and grabs me and Mace. We were sitting together in coach. He's like, hey, Cal's awake if you guys want to come up and do the interview with him. Mm. So Mace and I interviewed Cal. Over the North Pole.
Yeah.
Like literally over Siberia.
That's really cool.
And
that's
I
awesome.
Have the video of all. So of all these videos. And I get to China and I'm like, I got shit. So I'm going to kick the sun's ass. I got stuff nobody's going to have. I get there. YouTube. China. China.
Yeah. Oh.
Nothing worked.
Nothing worked.
Nothing worked.
Because
I couldn't get any.
Illegal over there.
I couldn't get any of the videos up. So I had all of this gold, this interview with Cal. I had all this stuff
to
put out at WNST.net. And you couldn't put it up until I got to Japan.
That was crazy. It's an amazing trip. Remember Renegade had a crew there, too. They were filming the Renegade production house.
Jeff Wilkinson. Just great people, man.
It was cool.
It was a great
they
trip.
They ended up pulling a documentary together called Shortstop Goes to China. It was like it's just a kind of a cool trip. Yeah.
All of that being said,
yeah.
that is a really – you did unique stuff like that with Cal. Plaster of Paris, really weird thing. I see guys like you and the Chad Steeles of the world having to wrangle players to get slimed now and like just stuff that is corporate and is wherever. Give me a couple of Cal stories, people asking – that you just had to say, Cal ain't doing that. And then some other weird things that Cal... Yeah,
what are the rejects?
Right. If you did this thing and it's funny, I'm sure Cal got asked to do... I'm sure kids interviewed Cal.
So I'll tell you one
like
thing.
That.
One thing that some they pursued Cal for years and years and years was Dancing with the Stars.
Oh.
Every year, this woman, I think her name was Dina, she would call me every year. And every year I'm like, Dina... I was always nice. Let me check, and Cal's just
same
like,
stuff he says to me.
And Cal's just like, I'm not doing that. I'm like, okay, go back. And she wants to try next year. So finally, at like year five, I'm like, Dina,
he doesn't
I just
dance.
Want you to know this will never, ever happen. Like you can do anything to him. You could torture him. He will never be on Dancing with the Stars. I just don't want you wasting your time anymore. So that was one that didn't happen.
That's just being honest. I prefer that.
Yeah.
A no is always appreciated.
Well, especially if
like
you
a,
just
like
can't.
Hard no.
Yeah. And that's not a don't want to. That's just I'm not.
This dude's not doing this.
Jacoby Jones could do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Hines Ward could do it, right?
Yeah. Stacey Keebler.
Stacey Keebler did it. Yeah. Absolutely. But so, I mean, I think of you as Cal's guy. Are you still Cal's guy?
I am.
You are. So if anybody wants Cal,
talked to him this morning.
Yeah, okay.
About
yeah.
A
I
bunch
mean,
of stuff that comes in.
I don't know. I mean, you and I do business, and I see you, and you come out. But like, what? What's Cal up to? Give me a Cal update.
Yeah, sure. Like, well, the cool thing about Cal is he's in a really good place. He's happy as a clam. He and his wife live in Annapolis and, you know, have the whole boat. They're all in on Annapolis, all that stuff, and loving life. And so, as you guys know, he sold his youth baseball company, Ripken Baseball. He sold that to Unrivaled. And then they just sold the Ironbirds to the guy that owns the Bay Sox, Greg Baroni. So really, he's focusing on his working out with the O's and his foundation that operates nationally, does amazing things for underserved communities all across, STEM centers, building parks. So really, those are his focuses. Happy as can be. So that's with Cal. But, you know, I'm still, you know, people come to me with different things and requests for his time and whatnot. And he and I analyze it along with his administrative or his executive assistant, Joan. And we just kind of come to an answer on both. And I'm that conduit still, and I will be until, you know, one of us is gone.
Well, until the meatballs come for Sam, I'll stay on Cal with you because it's not like he's not relevant. He's behind home plate. He's in the commercials with Rubenstein. I met Rubenstein about 6 weeks ago. I don't know what the perception on the street is that Cal has an office and he's running the team or that Rubenstein has an office and he's running the team because the commercials took some tongue-in-cheek. And
mostly tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah, and obviously you want to get past Peter and say there's a new sheriff in town, the team's really good, right? There's all of that going on. Yeah. Cal's entry into this, clearly it's a credibility play for David Rubenstein. In regard, I mean, I had lunch last week at Gertrude's. Kirk Schmoke was there.
Oh,
so
cool.
They're very not cool, really different than what Peter did when you were running the team, which is Pam Shriver and Jim McKay and Steve Jappy and different people.
That's right.
Cal's involvement, what is it? Just for public record, because people ask me, and I don't know.
Sure.
We said he's behind home plate. He's in the seats he's always in. His boy's doing media. I like Ryan a lot. But I don't – I think there was a perception Cal's out scouting talent, and I don't think that's true.
No, yeah. I mean, he's not. And you know, right now I think Cal took the first year in this ownership group of just absorbing it, soaking it in. You know, he was held at arm's length for 2 decades for reasons no one really understands.
Right.
And that's passed, and David welcomed him with open arms, and he just enjoyed it. You guys saw him. If you turn on TV, he went to almost every home game. It was crazy. And he's formed a great relationship with David and Mike Arrighetti, and he and Mike Elias get along really, really well and exchange ideas and that sort of thing. But he's very respectful. You guys know Cal enough, though. He's very respectful. Mike Elias knows what he's doing. He doesn't need Cal Ripken.
Cal's not calling him and saying, this is what I think, right?
But on the occasions when Mike or somebody on his team asks Cal, what do you think? He gleefully gives his opinion. He's got all this experience in baseball. But Mike Elias is a great baseball executive who knows what he's doing. And Cal's feeling this way. This is John talking, not Cal, but I think as a couple of years pass and as he gets more and more comfortable and gets to know people more, I think he'll say, I'd like to maybe have an opinion more on this or get a little more involved in this aspect of the club and whatnot, baseball business, whatever it might be. But I think he really wants to, like, be respectful and feel it out. Anyone who knows him knows he's the most contemplative, thoughtful guy. He is not a knee-jerk guy on anything, let alone something as big as this. But he's loving it. He's grateful to David and Mike for bringing him into the group, and he's having the time of his life.
If he were here and I could ask him a couple questions, I would ask him about running the business of the Ironbirds in baseball and whether that appealed to him, right? You know what I mean? You're a baseball player. He didn't run a popsicle stand. He was pretty focused on baseball. And then it was like I was out at Green Spring with you years ago, and it's like he's retiring and – how long's Peter going to live? There wasn't even a team in Washington. I remember poking him about the Montreal Expos in that conversation we had. They still existed at that time when he was voted into the Hall of Fame. Two, three, four, five.
Well, he was approached by the Nationals, too, when involved with them.
I think
well.
I remember that. Yeah. So all of that being said, he had a baseball business and one that cost a lot of money and a kind of different business at minor league as well as the Ripken baseball brand for kids, the Babe Ruth kind of part of thing. He's been involved in business forever and doesn't need to be at this point. Yeah. And I see his wife and I know all that. I'm like, at some point, just go have fun. And I don't say the ship has passed, but I'm sure he had a lot of thoughts in the aughts 20 years ago about when, if. And now it happens. I I would think I'm getting older too, and saying, how involved do you want to be?
Nestor, I think you nailed it. You really nailed it, right?
It's a full-time gig. It's beyond a full-time gig, and he knows that.
He's in a great place in his life. He's happy as he's ever been, but he's also, you know, at a different place. Like, if this had happened, like, right after he retired, he'd want to be involved in baseball operations and baseball decisions and all that kind of stuff. You know, but now the team's in a good place. Mike's a smart guy. He's at a different place, so... You know, we'll see how things evolve over the years ahead, but he's so content and thrilled just to be welcomed back to the stadium, walking underneath. Everybody's thrilled to see him there. The fans are thrilled to see him there. And if that brings some value to the club of his presence.
Well, it makes him feel good to be there, too.
Correct.
It does.
That's right.
Cal belongs at the ballpark. Master, like, right, little, you know?
You guys know this. His family was the Orioles, right? His old man is the Oriole way. His brother was the Oriole for years. This is the team that mattered to him. So when he was being courted from time to time with other teams, there's always that piece that's like, well, I'm an Oriole, right? And I want to be an Oriole. That's me. And now he is.
There he is. Nice. John Maroon's here. Sam's hanging out. Did your meatballs
come?
Meatballs.
They did.
The meatballs came.
Sam's like, let me
out of here.
I'm starving.
Meatballs on the set. Go eat. Do you have anything you want to say to John?
Hey, it's great to see you.
There you go.
It's been like a decade.
Get him a good seat at
First
Thursday so you didn't have to stand in line.
Anytime you
want
to come to a show, let me know.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. That's very kind. But really good seeing you. It's been a long time.
You too, John.
I'm glad you're doing well, Sam.
Sam Sessa is here. John Maroon is here. I'll just keep you. I'm just going to pot that down. We'll stay in the segment. There you go. Drop it. This is what they do with TMD. Drop the mic. There we go.
Boom. Sam's out.
How is life? What's going on? I get emails from your people.
Yeah,
one of the big
always
things.
Always bothering you with stuff.
No, not at all. But I mean, the senior PGA things on mind's eye. And I remember seeing you up at Caves a couple years ago when the PGA came in. And it felt like, well, the seniors are coming in, but that's 3-4 years.
Right.
Yeah, here we go, right? I mean, was that 22 that the.
Well, we had the BMW Championship in 20. Is that
22? Two or three?
No,
two.
One or two.
Okay, so this one's next year, right?
Yeah, and so the BMW Championship, which is in the FedEx Cup playoffs with the PGA Tour, is coming back to Caves Valley. That's August. And then the Senior PGA Championship, which is a major on the Senior Tour, is going to Congressional. That's in May. So we got two PGA Tour events that we're working on this year.
What's happening to Caves? It's a regular tour stop.
Your big tour stop, playoff, FedEx Cup playoff stop, BMW Championship, which was named the Tournament of the Year last year when it was in Denver. It was named Tournament of the Year by the PGA Tour. So we got a lot to live up to. We got to step it up.
Well, I mean, I think I've talked to you about this, maybe not at length, but I spent a day out there. It was in the middle of my crab cake tour.
It
was hot as hell. It was the last, that was their Sunday. I didn't stay for the playoff. I spent the morning and I left it after lunch and I spent 3 or 4 hours out on the course, hilly, but just transformative. I've been to Caves. I've been fortunate enough to be invited for lunch or whatever. I'm not a golfer. Everybody knows that. But I've been on that property 6-8 times over 30 years by invitation for lunches and whatnot. To go up there and see the public there and to see the way they did it, I don't know how much you're going to change this time around, but it really feels like you nailed it pretty good the first time around,
I'll tell you what. The Western Golf Association runs that event along with the people at Caves Valley. They did an amazing job. I think it showed Baltimore really well. It was a feather in the cap for our community.
We've never had anything like that.
It was packed. It was so cool. And it's going to be like that again. Then Caves put a bunch of money into the course to make it a little more challenging for the pros. And it's a little, just improvements all around.
Where would Caves find the money? I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
So I think it's going to be really, really cool. And look, Nestor, if I could work on golf all the time, I would. It's a great passion of mine. But great
Why
fun.
Is that? What do you love about golf?
I don't know. I just love
Because you worked in the NBA. You worked in football. Yeah. You worked for the Redskins.
Yeah.
You worked for the Orioles.
Yeah.
You worked in everything but hockey, right?
Yeah.
Did you work colleges too?
I did not.
Never worked in a college. Okay. But I think of you – like the golf thing feels like – it does feel to me like you like that because it's not team-oriented. I mean, you were in better spirits that day because your team wasn't going to win. When you're in team sports, it's a little more stressful.
It is. You know, it's funny you say it is stressful. And I'm telling you, the NFL, which you've been around a lot more than I have, but the NFL and MLB, working in both of those, the stresses on the NFL losses because they're so significant, 1 or 2 weeks.
Well, they last a whole week.
And they last all week, and then you lose 3 in a row. It's like your season. Baseball, you lose 3 in a row. You're like, we got to get that together.
Get on the plane. We'll go to Detroit. We'll fix things, right?
Exactly right. So it was just a different mindset. I found there was an intensity to the NFL that was like, oh, my God. And when I was at the Redskins for that 1 year, that was first year Snyder on the team. That's a whole nother thing. But the team was good. They won the NFC East, but it was still stressful as hell. And but a lot of fun.
Were you there for the Mike Nolan ice cream dumping?
I was.
Oh, see, I did not know you were there for that.
I got the whole backstory on that. I love Mike Nolan.
Well, I mean, who didn't love Mike Nolan?
I don't know. Well, Dan Snyder.
Well, who loved Dan Snyder?
I don't know.
Not even the people that took his paycheck. Apparently, John Maroon is here. We are at Amici's of Little Italy. It's all brought to you by our Ravens scratchers. This is the end for me. And it's got second chances. I'm going to have the magic eight ball. Seth Elkin's going to be here. They sent him to me this week special because he's one of Yin's in that from Danton up there. And it's a Pittsburgh week. For your mojo of sports, your Jersey guy, right? You've transplanted here
30 years ago.
It's only been 30?
It'll be 30 on next year.
Okay, 30 years ago. The transformation of Baltimore as a sports community, your role as a sports executive, that's a Cal executive, so you're always in sports and baseball, as well as the other things, golf, the other things you've been involved in. Yeah. The mojo here was $600 million for the baseball team, for the football team, new owner, one of the great athletes in our culture playing on the football team right now, and Lamar Jackson, like, sort of transcendent player. I don't want to say these are the good times.
Yeah.
We had an AFC championship game, and the team won 101 games and made the playoffs 2 years in a row.
Pretty good.
I'm looking up here. It's 99 days, the opening day. I have all my old Baltimore Colts memorabilia I've been going through and whatever. There weren't times like this where the baseball team feels like in the next 5 years – if Cal and David don't screw it up, that they'll have opportunities to be really competitive. And obviously the football team, that's a different vibe on the street here than when you arrived and there was no football team.
Right.
And really, you know, I'm meaner about Peter than you are, even though you work for him. It was what it was, and it wasn't very good, and it wasn't hopeful. Yeah. Certainly wasn't hopeful at Christmas time, way it is now.
I'll tell you this. I think just focusing on the football alone, right now is a great time to be a Baltimore sports fan. I think you could focus on Orioles didn't win the game, the Ravens lost at home in the AFC. Or you could focus on, like, holy crap, we were both in the postseason, both dominant teams.
Exciting seasons are exciting seasons.
That's right. You got to look at the season holistically. Once you get in the postseason, anything can happen. But I always say this, and I say this with great admiration and respect, Ravens fans are an incredibly spoiled fan base. They're in the playoffs virtually every single year. And I say this because I grew up as, wait for it, a New York Jets fan. And that's the worst organization in football right now. And they're my team because I was born that way. And that's it. And I love the Ravens. They are my team when they're not playing.
Are you watching them when they're 2-11, the Jets? Or trail?
I watched it Sunday.
I fell for the Giants fans and went to the Ravens game because I'm like, I've been up there in that environment. The Jets always suck.
Yeah.
Giants fans wearing bags and stuff. I'm like,
no.
Dude, you've had a pretty good run.
They've had a good run.
Said Spider Lockhart, you guys have been okay. They kept showing that Yale Bowl year and all that. I mean,
two Super Bowls with
Phil Sims got there after the Pisarcik incident.
Yeah.
After that, they got stable, and Lawrence Taylor showed up.
You got two Super Bowls with Philly.
Your life would have been a hell of a lot better if your parents would have made you a Giants fan when you were a kid.
You know I do.
Seriously,
I have a bone to pick. Yes. Oh, my God.
Why did you become a Jets fan?
Namath.
Yeah, right. That's it.
It was it. It was truly it. Like, yeah, it was crazy. But going back to the Ravens, I think they're a team that's in the postseason virtually every year. And now we're getting that kind of feeling that we expect out of the Orioles, too. And that's such a good feeling. What a blessing for our city, for our fan base. It's amazing.
Well, for me, there's hope, right?
Yeah,
I mean, with the baseball team. And this is where you, Cal, I met David Rubenstein. Yeah. I don't think he's going to live here. I think Cal's going to live on my TV screen during the season. So, I mean, but that's the presence is the present, right? I mean, like, really, like, being present.
Agreed.
We noticed when Cal wasn't there. We noticed when ownership wasn't around. Like, you know, so, but all that being said, there's a level now for me in the community as I walk into saying, all right, I don't have any patience for you, Cal or David. It's been 30 years.
I
don't have patience.
Yeah.
This offseason has been about where is the change for Katie Griggs, for the organization, for the payroll, for front-facing, and this is what you do from PR, from the front. You don't work for the team. You work with Cal, so you don't speak for the team. And you and I have gotten sideways behind closed doors about, like, they should hire you. They need a guy. They need somebody from Baltimore. They need a Baltimore. They're not going about it that way, and it's December. Give me some vibe out for things you're seeing that you feel like they're doing well, and other things that, and I don't know if you've met Katie Griggs or not, but okay, that's unfortunate. But if she calls you, and you should, what? This is a great thing to say to you. Yeah. What would you say to Katie Griggs? And well, pretend Cal's not listening now. Just you and me, man. We're having a beer with Maroon, like your thing, you know.
Well, first I would tell her, welcome to the city. You know, I mean, I think the one thing I learned when I first came here is that you have to earn your stripes in Baltimore. They're not given to you. And you got to prove yourself a little bit. You got to earn your way with Baltimore.
What does that mean, though? What she would then say, I'm from Raleigh. I worked in soccer. I worked for the mayor. What does that mean? Tell me what that means.
Baltimore,
you got to earn your stripes
Baltimore,
here.
To me, you got to prove that you love Baltimore, that you care about Baltimore, that you want to be part of the community, that you can eat a crab with the best of them. I think those are the things that really matter. Like when I moved here, I didn't feel, and I'm not judging. I didn't feel, but it wasn't immediate. Like, come here, new guy. It was like, all right, let's see. You're a guy from Cleveland, guy from Jersey.
Did you think you were staying here 30 years and making a life?
No.
You thought you were
going to
be the Yankees PR director one day. Like, you know what?
I didn't know what the future held, but I certainly thought I'd be here. But I'd been there with my third job out of college, and I thought,
the Orioles PR job was a great job.
Great job, and I was under 30 when I got the head job. So I was 29, which is pretty cool.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I still think of you as young. You must have really been young. I mean,
I was really young.
I was young too. I mean, I was 26.
We were both young back then.
Yeah. I mean, you always felt a little older than me, maybe because you had a job that had a title and like all of that, that you felt like you were half a generation, that you were listening to Zeppelin on LP as opposed to seeing. But I guess that time and space and the years start to crunch to say, 29-year-old PR director, that's not. It's a young person's game, dude.
I mean,
flying around, doing all that. Like, I dreamed of being a baseball beat writer. You can pay me $500,000 a year right now and say, you're on the beat. Chris Corman's coming. I'm sure he'll have that kind of money for me.
Yeah.
And you're on the beat. And I'd be like, oh, dude. February, spring training through October. It's a long season, man.
It is the best job, from going back to the PR director, it is the best job in the world for a young person. And I remember around, so I was here, I got the job when I was 29, probably went to the Redskins when I was like 35 as a VP of PR or whatever. But at 35, I was kind of like, I can't be on the road.
Once a week's a good schedule for football, right?
It was great.
Right.
Like it was. I remember when I interviewed for the job, putting the Snyder factor aside, I was excited. I always loved the NFL. It was cool, historic franchise. And I remember
he was working for Peter. I'm just saying. I'm just throwing that in. That's just throwing that in for you.
And a really cool side note, I got a call from a guy, Harvey Green, who was a Yankees PR guy, that he went to the Dolphins. And he said, John, take it. It's like semi-retirement compared to baseball, you know, because it's, once a week.
Harvey was a great guy, too.
He was a great guy. And so I fortunately got the job, and I really enjoyed it. If it wasn't for the ownership, I would have probably tried to stay in the NFL a long time. Everyone's very welcoming. I enjoyed it. I love working with the athletes. I love being a part of the team.
Who's quarterback?
Brad Johnson.
Oh, okay.
Great dude. They were loaded. They were a good team. They
Super Bowl champion Brad Johnson.
Yes, he went to Tampa and won the ring. Yeah, so great guy.
John Maroon is our guest.
Wife. Can we talk about Brad Johnson? His wife is named Nikki.
Nikki.
She played volleyball at like South Florida. She was jaw-droppingly beautiful and so friendly too. I remember she'd walk in the office and Drew Johnson, who worked with me at the Redskins, he was Phelps publicist.
Sure.
So DJ and I would just, oh my God, Nikki's here. We'd get all happy. She was so sweet and absolutely stunning.
And you were 1 year with the Redskins?
Yeah, 1 year.
One and done. Down there in
it's funny. Everyone,
Loudoun Park.
My last day on the job was the day of the draft. We drafted Chris Samuels and LeVar Arrington 1 and 2, and then hopped on Snyder's plane from New York, flew down here, went to the stadium. There was a big fan thing. It was really cool. LeVar and Chris were very excited. It was great, and then I was out. I think everybody thought I was fired because that's what Dan did. He fired people. And I said, no, I left, but I'm sure I would have been fired. I beat him to the park.
You were in the process of getting fired.
Yeah, that's right. It was coming.
A mutual parting of the ways,
yeah,
as the PR thing would say.
Yeah.
John Maroon is here. We have not had a mutual parting of the ways. So for what you do, people know of you as sports and Cal and all that. I happen to know that like you've created this whole industry of PR and media, and one of our partners with we work when we do golf. You do all
golf,
yeah. I mean, have Tom on all the time, and have all you know, all the folks that run. I go through
Hollywood
them all here now.
Hollywood Casino, right?
That's Hollywood Casino at Perryville. I watched Lamar lose to the Giants up there last year, so I don't hold that against them. But you work in governmental spaces. You work in local spaces, business openings, events. You're a reformed sports executive.
That's right.
What is the Maroon? I would say agency or PR. Yeah, what do you even call it at this point? It's the agency still?
Yeah, it's an agency. It's a public relations firm. And thanks for asking us. So we work really. There's kind of three buckets in which we work. It's earned media, which is media relations, talking to folks like yourself. It's social media. We run social platforms. We create content, do strategy for clients on their social. And it's paid when they have a budget. How do we help them deploy it to get the most out of it? So we do that. And then really, we the three vectors in which most of our clients live are nonprofits, hospitality, and sports property. So sports is largely outside of the Ripken thing. It's the Maryland Sports Commission. Terry Hazeltine's a great client. They're doing great things for our state. And then it's a lot of events that come into town. Nonprofits, I mean, we're talking Maryland Food Bank, Cal Ripken Senior Foundation, National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial, Marine Corps Scholarship Foundation, some really great nonprofits.
Well, the Food Bank. I mean, I did the Cup of Super Bowl last year. We're going to do that again this year in February, moving it around.
Yep. The Food Bank is a blessing to a state. It's the most well-run nonprofit I could think of, and they are feeding people across our state.
It's fundamental. And, you know, I did the Cup of Super Bowl last year. Carmen came out and did an hour with me. On like the third or fourth day, I was a couple days into it. I was getting like tired, getting a little punch drunk doing 8 hours a day of live radio, which I'm not going to do marathon crap. I'm getting too old for that. Yeah. I'm going to do it. We're going to do charities. I'm not doing it on a clock live radio. I'm just not. My wife said I'd lose my mind. I Carmen out, and just talking about this time of year, it's the holidays. The lights are up. You know, it smells like mistletoe in here. Everybody wants to give a coat. They want to give. They want to do something. All the athletes are out doing stuff, giving the kids and toys for all that.
Yep.
And then in January, it just kind of goes away.
Yes.
And all these food pantries in the coldest, darkest period. That's why Carmen said to me and the folks at the food bank, they're like, nobody does anything for us in February. I'm like, well, let me get behind that because that's when the pantries get empty.
Yes.
And this, God, we have a snowstorm for 10 days. You wonder where you're going to eat. We get a foot of snow, 2 feet of snow, everything shuts down. I talked about it because, you know, I didn't think about this too much. I mean, you've known me 30 years, but when I got to thinking about like a cause for a Cup of Super Bowl and what's going on with me doing real Super Bowls and Chad and all the crap, I thought to myself, what's a cause I can get behind that would be universal, that wouldn't involve money or give me money or any of that, although you can donate to the food bank. They'll take your money. But my dad grew up in Scranton, Pennsylvania, 1929. He was 10 years old. He would always, and my dad's been dead 35 years. I don't think about my dad's words. It doesn't come to me, his little sayings or stuff he said or his dumb jokes or any of that stuff, even though I praise him every year on March 5th, it's birthday. But he would always say to me, when I was a boy, because he stood in soup lines, he would always, never voted for a Republican because of Herbert Hoover. Chicken in every pot, my dad would say, son of a, you know, like whatever, right? So he would rub my belly and say, you got a dollar in your pocket, put some food in your belly. Put some food in your belly. And I hadn't thought of that in 30 years until this Cup of Super Bowl thing happened. And I called the food bank, and on the first day, I saw someone with that came to pick the stuff up at Dana Fadley's, and they did the show with me. And I just remembered that moment. I hadn't thought of that in 30 years.
Nice
and I
memory.
Thought, well, there it is. There's, you know, you don't know why you, it's like the psychology couch. You don't know exactly why.
That's right.
But your why comes to you sometimes.
It's true.
But the food bank thing. So when these folks, when you got out of sports and you're like, I'm Ripken's guy, but I was a sports guy, but I'm going to change that brand. And we're going to do more sports like golf and other things. The nonprofit hospitals, the other, your entree into that world for PR. That's I mean, you made a hell of a brand move, you know?
Yeah, thanks. It was gradual. I wish I could tell you it was some great plan. I mean, when I opened the agency in 2006, I thought it would be a sports agency.
Yeah, you thought it was a sports agency.
Oh, I knew, right? I had Cal and I had the
Who would hire me to do anything else, right?
That's it.
Yeah, sure.
And so slowly we kind of just said, oh, shoot, if we're going to do this right, we need to get other kinds of businesses, other kinds of clients. And a couple of people took a risk on us. I remember the American Cancer Society, Maryland chapter, was the first one to really go, yeah, we'll give you a shot, sports guy. And it just kind of like took off from there, and then leaked into hospitality with, you know, we're lucky with casinos, hotels, some restaurants and stuff. So, no, it's been great, but it was certainly it was an evolution, and it was a gradual one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're busy every day doing stuff. I wanted to bring the golf up. What else are you work? Plug away on current events.
Oh,
we did Cal. We did ancient history. We've done holidays. Yeah. We haven't had a meatball yet here at Amici's. But what gets you up every day? Because it's not just Cal or just the golf. Yeah. It's always you're finding new things, and you hit me about them all the time.
Yeah, and I love it. It's fun. And thanks, Nestor. I think, you know, I got 15 people at the company, and we
15.
All. Yeah, there's 15 of us now, and we're all.
No
driven.
Wonder I get so many emails.
That's right. They're all like doing nests that, yeah. No, but you know, it's a great group. They're really passionate about what they do. And I think what we've done really well is we've kind of evolved with the industry, right? So we were one of the first PR firms, I think, to bring a videographer in-house. We got really into understanding social and taking a deep dive on that. Now we're getting really into the AI universe, which is freaky deaky. And so I think just staying ahead of the curve, not putting the emphasis on me, because there's younger people that understand that stuff a lot better than I do. I'm the old fart.
You're the front.
I'm the front. That's right. But there's a lot of really, really smart, engaging, creative people in our place that make sure we're staying on top of it for our clients. But you know, Ness, the one thing you understand, I've always admired you as a business owner, a hustler, and somebody who goes out and finds a business. It's not for the faint of heart. It's not for everybody. You got to go every single day, and you got to find business. And that's just
you
either love it or you don't. You're made for it, you're not. You are made for it.
I had a three-decade sponsor.
Wow.
Cancel on me this week.
Ooh.
And I got a 2-sentence email.
I'd be home in the fetal position.
No. It was a shrinking client, you know, through years. I got a 3-sentence email after being a spokesperson for the brand for 28 years. And changing hands, whatever. Didn't even get a meeting. Didn't get a pitch. And I'm thinking to myself, we're just in a different place and space when Chad Steele says, you're a media member and you're not. And we didn't even cover the Giants game the other day because Luke had a religious object. Luke is a deacon at his church. Oh, he had a family issue.
I didn't know that.
He's Deacon Jones. he call him that. He loves that.
Great.
So we didn't – and look, 16-point whatever, it was a blowout or whatever. But from the sports media standpoint, and I had Mark Hyman on, and he and I went nose-to-nose 2 weeks ago about – I had a 16-year-old girl reach to me a couple weeks ago and say, I love sports. I want to be a sports broadcaster. Dad's a fan. He said, can you talk to my granddaughter? It was his granddaughter. Can you talk to my granddaughter? And I'm like, she don't want to talk to me. I'm too disgruntled, like, and I don't have anything to offer that's hopeful to say that if you go get a media journalism degree at Maryland, that there's going to be, a job, and I'll talk to Chris Corman about that when he gets here as well.
Journalism's harder than ever, man.
And the fact that I stand here and do this, and this is a big, this is a local sponsor that sent me a Dear John. It was Nestor. And I'm thinking to myself, all these years into this, you're like, I stand in admiration of your business. Nobody knows, like, what goes in to keeping a sponsor for 30 years and the importance of it. And I'm really getting to the point. I'm going to develop an app for Baltimore Positive, and I have a vertical on QR codes and different things that I'm going to be doing next year, because I've just decided, don't tell anybody. Nobody listens to the show anyway. The sports thing, I'm 56 now, and other than collecting old trinkets that mean something to me, like today I almost spent $12 buying a Jets Baltimore Colts ticket stub from the first game I went. It wasn't a stub. It's a whole ticket. Unused ticket. Jets-Colts 1973 is the first game I went to.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah, Stan White sacked Joe Namath, separated his shoulder. Stan loves telling me that when he sees me.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, like, I've been sports all of this time, and I try to think of what sports gives to me at this point. Maybe I've just wrung out what my 27 Super Bowls, my 50 World Series games, my 200,000 hours of taking phone calls and hiring people and all that.
I hear you.
Like, there just comes a point where it's like, I shook David Rubenstein's hand. He didn't care about me. He just didn't care about me. You know what I mean? Like, at all. And I'm just sort of like, the thing that I do that's most important is this, business. Connecting Baltimore to Baltimore, that's really always been the heart of what I did.
Well, it's
bringing Baltimore people to Hooters 30 years ago is no different than bringing Baltimore people to Amici's today.
I agree. You know? No, it's critically important. And look, the world changes. And going back to like the three-sentence email you got from the sponsor.
Somebody who's never met me, somebody that's never taken a meeting, that's running a company that I've been involved with, didn't even take a Zoom for 20 minutes and then fire me.
It's
bizarre.
I think just some people don't know how to handle. The better you handle the most difficult situations, the better you're going to look, the better you're going to feel. Like, instead of doing that, they might feel easier at the time. Like, I don't want to hear this guy. I don't want to talk to him. I don't want to take shit. I don't want to, here, send this email. It reflects poorly on you, on your organization. And if you just sat down and said, Nestor, I'm really sorry. I hope you understand.
We cut the budget. Right.
Okay. You know, it still stinks. Maybe we could figure out a way to save some of it.
Maybe next year.
Maybe not. Something.
Lie to me.
But
yeah,
but look me in the eye, right? And
that's just a Baltimore. That's Baltimore. That's Baltimore.
Better. I love that.
Look me in the eye is Baltimore.
That's right.
You know?
I love that.
And, you know, I got sideways with Billy Ripken 30 years ago. He still takes my call. Sometimes he does. Sure. How does Cal feel watching his brother on TV? That must be, right? I mean.
He loves it.
Billy's in his element.
Well, Billy is in his element. And if anybody watches MLB Network, he's very good. But he's also the guy. He is the guy that, like, doesn't like analytics at all. He wrote a whole book about it. He likes the old school scouts and all that. Cal's a little more like mixed, right? He sees the value of all the modern day analytics, but also sees the value of this. And so
Cal has always been more analytical than Billy. We
That's
know
right.
this.
Correct.
We know you
Nailed
already went
it.
Through this at the beginning
most analytic,
of the segment.
Most analytical guy I've ever met.
Well, then why can he not like analytics then?
Well, he does like it, but he likes a balance.
Well,
Billy's is just straight, like no analytics.
I would say to you that you still have the best part of sports. You have Cal.
Yeah.
So that's the memory and what things that used to be.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for some, and I don't want to be a get off my lawn guy, but I'm waiting for some of the current things to be as good as it used to be.
Well,
and that's not me being a prick. That's me saying going to a Ravens game in seats that I was thrown out of that now cost three times as much, and there's 20,000 Eagles fans around. That didn't happen for 20. There's a picture of Ray Lewis over here kneeling on Ben Roethlisberger's skull.
I love that picture.
You know, like with the steam coming out and all that. Like, if that happened in Pittsburgh, it was all Pittsburgh people. If that happened in Baltimore, it's all Baltimore people.
Yeah.
This, the gambling, the lack of local focus, the fact that Chad Steele would throw me out of all people after 40 years of like, just the fact that they don't care as much to be local, that they think of themselves as more of international brands, and they're not on the streets. And if I would say anything to Cal, I said to David Rubenstein, there's 10,000 empty seats at the playoff game.
Yeah.
That's trauma.
Yeah.
That would have never happened in 96 or 97 on your watch.
No, but
and
you
if it happened.
Get in, there. In 95, 96, 97, you could not get into Oriole Park.
Here's where I'll get a little sideways with you on this. Because if you're working there right now and you're the PR guy, or if it's Jen Grant, I mean, whoever it is running it, that's got to hurt you, dude. It hurt me watching on TV.
Yeah.
10,000 empty seats at a playoff game. Yeah. When you worked there, it would have been inconceivable, let alone.
I remember being so rip shit when we played the Yankees in like 96, 97. If there were 500 Yankee fans,
there's too many.
I was
499
too many. I would be like,
well, this is
myself.
Why. I mean, my Ravens tickets, and Chad Steele doesn't know this, but he didn't care to know. But the reason I had all the seats in 513 that I. Because first off, I sold 1,200 PSLs. So we had 13, 11, and 13 was my section. 12 and 14 were full of our fans in the day. So it was all the preseason games were full. In the preseason game, every seat in our section was taken by the PSL holder. But the seats in the front, the first three rows, handicap, and because of the charter in the 90s with PSLs, 1% of the stadium had to be earmarked to not be PSL. Now, there would have been 100,000 PSLs for 65,000 seats, right? So there were 650 or whatever that number is, and those seats were not available because they were handicapped. And what would happen is the first 2 years it was all Steelers fans, all Browns fans once they – and they were all getting thrown. People were throwing at their heads in the row one, two, and three. So the reason I'm in row one for 20 years is Baker – and Roy
like,
came to me,
this,
and they're like, dude, fights in your section. Just take the tickets and sell them to people that are wearing purple.
Right.
So my rule for anybody, and my wife's family will tell you, in 2003, I married into a Patriots family, and they came here and played. And I said to my father-in-law and my sister-in-law, you can sit in our seats, but you ain't wearing a Tom Brady jersey.
No.
Like, you're just not. Not in my seats. You're not doing that. That's in my soul.
Yeah,
so to see 10,000 empty seats at a playoff game, and I'm one of them, I could have bought a ticket for $10. Yeah. I was free that day. I'm watching on TV because I'm banned, and it pisses me off. And they don't deserve my money.
I think there are a lot of challenges in sports right now, right? And I'm saying it's here for sure, and I think
– Well, the media part's the biggest challenge. Like, this week, trying to find Netflix, Apple TV just to watch the games.
Yeah.
They have over-speculated on what we're willing to – baseball's been doing that forever.
Yeah.
What time's the game tomorrow? I don't know. We'll let you know tonight.
Yeah, right.
Like, literally, right?
So I think there's all that stuff is just kind of a confluence. And then people just having more diverse interests than we were kids. You know, when we were kids, it was watch the baseball game, watch the football game. And now there's 8 million other things to do. There's other ways to entertain yourself. So, look, I think all sports. And then you look at colleges, right, with the NIL. And you look at college with the transfer portal.
The NIL thing, that's a whole
– And the transfer portal,
it's made me lose interest in it.
It's hard.
As a fan, it's just made me care less.
I agree.
And this is where – if I have any message for Katie Griggs or for Cal or for – make us all care more.
Yeah.
It's been 30 years where it hasn't been great. We'll all – like, I'm not here to piss on Peter. Like, he's gone. We can all agree it could be better. We can all agree somebody's going to have to sit in those 10,000 empty seats at the playoff game next year. Let's figure out who they are. And let's figure out a higher price point where people feel more value.
Well, look.
And they feel like I'm going to abandon my children and my job to go to a baseball playoff game because it matters that much to me. It mattered that much to my dad.
No, I agree. Look, I mean, here's the other thing, too. When you have a guy like Ruben Stein, who's a Baltimore guy, obviously deep pockets with a great ownership group, and you got – a legend like Cal Ripken back in the fold. It's very heartwarming, but it also raises the bar of expectation.
People
right?
expect something
right.
different this offseason
right.
that they haven't had, and they haven't gotten it yet.
I would even say even the years ahead. I think there's an expectation. You're starting to see a little bit now. There's some movement on improvements to the ballpark, which I think are much needed. It's a great park, but it's outdated in a lot of ways, right? And so I just think there is that just comes with the territory. Okay.
Well, that's any business. The previous owners let it go a little bit.
Right.
You know, I mean,
that
translates when you sell something. But you know, you're with Cal, and Cal's involved in this, and for that, it brings credibility right from the beginning.
But it also brings
expectations.
That's
right. So we're in agreement on that.
I agree. Yeah, 100%.
John Maroon is here. He's running things around the city. You can find him out on the internet anywhere. Is it Maroon? I want to say Maroon Agency. Still called that?
MaroonPR.com.
MaroonPR.com. So it's okay. Because the agency sounds so.
Well, we're a PR agency.
I don't want to offend Bob Leffler because I love him, but it sounds like it's from the 1970s when you're saying
phrase,
an agency.
MaroonPR.com, baby.
The only agency that buys advertising for WNST because agencies were always my kryptonite.
We got more where that came from.
I got meatballs here. We're at Amici's. We're doing the first ever. You're a pioneer. First ever crab cake tour without a crab cake.
Boom.
There's no crab cake here, but there is a Pane Rotondo here, and there's delicious meatballs. Sam Sessa was here a little earlier. We had Marty Conway here for an hour talking about the sports business of business. John Maroon is here. It's a little theme going on in the baseball bar. We're doing baseball stuff. Alan McCallum's going to be here later. We're going to have some surprises as well. Chris Corman from the Baltimore Banner will be here, formerly the Baltimore Sun. And I keep saying to Chris, when this thing falls apart, I'm going to need a gig. You know, so I'm trying to be nice to Corman.
Yeah.
You know, so
Corman's a good man. He's been around here a long time.
Yeah, he and I are going to piss on each other about paywalls.
Love it.
I am Nestor. We are WNST. We're at Amici's of Little Italy. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with our friends at Jiffy Lube MultiCare. I'm feeling so satiated visiting with friends for the holidays.
Yes.
It feels so Burl Ives to me. You know, I feel like I need a red nose.